The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
The risk of a U.S. debt default sends investors hunting for new safe havens. Plus, Ukrainian-backed forces stage a cross-border incursion into Russia. And why youth unemployment in China is raising economic and political red flags.
If you're a student and you start out in unemployment, it really increases the risk that you may have lower chances of getting a decent job down the road. And if, you know, more people end up in similar situations, then that can really cause social instability, which is something Chinese government is very worried about.
It's Tuesday, May 23rd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Another day brings with it another round of talks in Washington as White House and Republican congressional negotiators attempt to avoid a default on the U.S. debt. They have got just days left to get a deal done, with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy saying an agreement must be reached this week in order to have time for the legislation to pass Congress. Meanwhile, the current lack of a deal is making markets increasingly twitchy, something Journal finance editor Alex Frangos has been monitoring. All right, Alex, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, has said a U.S. default would be a catastrophe, and yet it doesn't seem like there's a deal currently in sight. How are investors reacting to that?
Underneath the surface, you are seeing some nervousness, especially in the trading of government bonds, very short-term government bonds, which are the ones that investors are afraid are going to be defaulted on. So you've seen the yields rising on very short-term Treasury bonds, and some peculiar things going on, including that some corporate bonds, bonds issued by companies like Microsoft and Johnson & Johnson, these big heavyweight, cash-rich, AAA-rated companies, actually yields, their borrowing costs are lower than the government's for similar maturities, which is pretty rare. Generally, the market views the U.S. government as the, you know, absolute safest of the safest type of asset out there. It's the benchmark for everything in markets around the world. So to have Microsoft and J&J nip ahead of them is pretty remarkable.
So what does that tell us then about investor thinking?
It tells us that, you know, at least in that corner of the bond market, some investors would rather kind of get out of the way of trouble, even if they think it's a very remote possibility. Better to have your money invested in bonds of a company that has enough cash and doesn't have a debt ceiling, so to speak, and so will pay you back on time. Now, if there is a default in the U.S. government, investors think it's going to have pretty strong ripples throughout the markets. And so even those bonds will probably sell off in some shape or form, but investors view it as a somewhat safer place to be than these very short-term government bonds that could miss a payment.
And to that end, Alex, what other signals should we be watching for in markets as we keep on inching closer and closer to this debt deadline?
People are looking at those short-term bonds. They're looking at credit default swaps, which are these kind of insurance-type products that investors trade, that if a borrower defaults on their debt, then if you're holding one of these CDS, you get like an insurance payout. And so we've seen the price of those increase for U.S. government debt, which is, you know, pretty unusual. But for the most part, the market is kind of looking at this as a brinksmanship sort of situation like 2011, that they'll get a deal done, there's not going to be major damage. And the signals from Washington with the talks in recent days, you know, I think Speaker McCarthy said yesterday that the talks were constructive. They think they're going to get a deal. So people are not super freaked out just yet.
And that was Wall Street Journal finance editor Alex Frangos. Another thing for investors to consider today, updates on business activity from the UK and European Union. The Journal's Paul Hannon has been watching this morning's Purchasing Managers Index figures and told me what's standing out.
So going into this morning, the European economies had a pretty strong start to this year, better than expected. But what we found out is that sort of ground to a halt in May when a slowdown took hold, both in the UK and in the Eurozone. Basically, manufacturers are cutting their prices because demand for what they make is pretty weak, but there's still strong enough demand for what service providers are offering to allow them to raise their prices, and indeed at a faster pace than last month. So if you're a central banker, you're probably going to conclude that the job you're doing is not yet done, and that you might need to tighten policy a little bit more in the future.
And Paul, the consequence of that for consumers would be?
The consequence of it is that they're likely to have to pay more for their borrowing over coming months than otherwise would have been the case, because the central banks in Europe have made it clear that services are the sort of area that worries them about inflation, and that if they see stronger service price inflation, they're quite likely to raise their key interest rates again.
And we'll get PMI figures showing business activity for the United States later today. Writer E. Jean Carroll is seeking fresh damages from former President Donald Trump relating to disparaging comments that he made about her during an interview on CNN. Trump appeared at a CNN town hall earlier this month, a day after he was found liable in a civil case for sexually abusing and defaming Carroll. At that event, Trump blasted the decision, calling it a fake story and referring to Carroll as, quote, a whack job. Representatives for Carroll say she's seeking further damages relating to Trump's, quote, malicious repetition of allegedly defamatory comments in relation to the verdict. Ukrainian-backed troops have crossed into Russia in the largest border incursion since the war began. While the extent of the incursion into Russian territory couldn't be established, online videos suggest that Ukrainian-backed troops have taken control of several villages along the border. Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Georgi Konchev has been following this story, and he joins me now with the latest. Georgi, explain what's happened here and what Kiev and Moscow are saying about this.
Yeah, this seems to be quite a big deal because we had a similar type of incursion back in March, but on a much, much smaller scale. Now here we have two groups of volunteers consisting of Russian citizens who have been backed by Ukraine without Ukraine having any direct involvement, it says. But still, these two groups have taken some territory near the border inside Russia. And it is a kind of a reversal of what we've seen over the past more than a year, when obviously Russia invaded Ukraine. And now we're seeing some fighting inside Russia's borders. Moscow, they kind of sought to dismiss it to some extent to make sure this is not seen as a big deal. And the Kremlin said that they're dealing with it. There's enough forces for the Kremlin to be able to take care of the situation. But as we're seeing, there's still some fighting ongoing for a second day now. Ukraine, at the same time, they have said that they're aware of these groups, but Kiev is denying that it's directly involved.
Georgi, what might this incursion tell us about Ukraine's upcoming counteroffensive, about Russia's capacity to fight back? Is it clear what message is trying to be sent by all of this?
There's several messages that we can take from this. Obviously, Ukraine is readying for an offensive to take its land back. It's been widely telegraphed that this is coming. And situations like this, attacks like this, can be seen as operations that are aimed at kind of knocking Russia off balance and forcing them to, you know, divert forces that would be otherwise used a specific defensive location in Ukraine. So this could be seen as one of these so-called shaping operations. Another way to see this, of course, is the fact that there's resistance in Russia, and in this case, it's actually bearing some fruit, and that resistance seems to be backed or at least acknowledged by Ukraine, which is also important. And it does show, of course, how huge this whole war is, and the front line, it's very, very long, over 600 miles. There's going to be a lot of defense lines, a lot of fortifications by Russia, so Ukraine will have to be very judicious as to where exactly it chooses to focus its main offensive. But these shaping operations, if we can see them in that way, are key because they do divert attention from elsewhere in the front line.
And have we received any indication, Georgi, that Kyiv might actually send its own troops in or use its own weapons to penetrate further into Russia? They've been warned in the past, right, from Western allies to not, for instance, use long-range missiles to attack targets within Russia. Might they actually get further involved here?
That's a good question. I think it's unlikely that Ukraine would use its own troops directly inside Russian territory. but they have been known to strike various military targets with long-range weapons deep inside Russian territory, including using drones. And those targets have been military-specific facilities that Russia is using for its war in Ukraine. So that is likely to continue. And of course, Ukraine is also launching all kinds of attacks on territory that Russia controls in Ukraine, including Crimea and other parts.
That was Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Georgi Kontchev. Georgi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, China's economy may be broadly bouncing back from the pandemic, but the situation is quite a bit gloomier for the country's young people. We'll look at the economic and political consequences of a sharp rise in China's youth unemployment after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Joblessness among young people in China is becoming a major headache for the country's leaders, with youth unemployment rates among those aged 16 to 24 hitting a record high of over 20% in April. That data came as a surprise to most economists, who believe that China is still on a solid recovery path from the pandemic, and yet there are now fears that the youth unemployment situation will get even worse over the summer. Wall Street Journal China economics reporter Stella Yifan Xia is in Hong Kong with the latest on this. All right, Stella, so what is going on here? What is behind these elevated unemployment rates for young people?
There's a mix of factors, and I would say the most fundamental reason is that China simply doesn't produce enough high-paying jobs for the younger generation. And that really exacerbated the kind of a mismatch that has existed in the labor market for quite some time. So on the one hand, China is going through a massive boom in higher education. This year, more than 11.5 million students will graduate from colleges. And that's a lot of new graduates, considering like China is aiming to create just 12 million new jobs this year. On the other hand, Chinese economy hasn't really created enough high-skilled jobs in both services and manufacturing sector. And by high-paying, high-skilled jobs, we're really talking about jobs like working as accountant, people working in the medical sector, and in new material industries. Instead, what the economy created a lot more are those low-end services jobs. And these jobs, by nature, they don't necessarily attract the college graduates. Many of these young kids, they grow up as a single child, so therefore, they have the financial means to wait a bit longer in search of more ideal job or work, or they simply can choose not to work for an extended period of time.
I can't imagine this youth unemployment situation is going unnoticed in Beijing. What is the Chinese government doing to try and turn the situation around?
So the Chinese authorities are surely concerned about the problem. Beijing has tried a number of different tactics to address the issue. For example, they've mandated state companies to hire more graduates this year than they did last year. China is also attempting to divert more young people to attend vocational schools and acquire different skills that are more suitable for jobs in the manufacturing sector instead of in high-end services. And more recently, the state media, they've dialed up rhetoric as well. They've came out with articles and editorials that urge young graduates to really embrace menial work or simply starting their own business.
And do we know how well those efforts are going over?
So far, they've had really limited success. These opportunities at state companies are really scarce in comparison to jobs created by the private sector in the past few decades. And young people simply, they don't want to take up blue-collar jobs. They don't find those jobs very attractive. And those jobs don't pay well enough, usually, for young graduates to afford a living in large cities. To really absorb a more educated workforce, China has to ensure that the economy grows fast enough to create jobs in the near term. China also needs to revive confidence among business and rely on the private sector instead of state-owned companies to generate more high-end jobs.
And Stella, in terms of the level of concern around this, how high is it given the economic and maybe the political and social ramifications of a continued youth unemployment situation? What are the nerves like in Beijing?
If youth unemployment remains stubbornly high, that's really bad news for the economy. Likely more young people may have to settle down with lower paying jobs over time, and that will likely put downward pressure on China's overall wage growth. And as we know, young people tend to spend more out of their income than older generations. So if more young workers are struggling to find jobs, that really hurts China's pursuit of becoming a consumption-led economy. And obviously, it takes a toll on a personal level. We've seen studies that show a prolonged period of joblessness can cause pretty severe mental and financial stress. So if you're a student and you start out in unemployment, it really increases the risks that you may have lower chances of getting a decent job down the road. Back in last November, we saw protests about China's handling of zero COVID. Young students holding pieces of blank paper on campus in large cities in order to express their dissatisfaction with China's response to zero COVID. And some argue part of their frustration really stemmed from the fact that they're facing a really tough labor market and they have struggled to secure jobs. So there are real consequences out there, and that's something Chinese leadership is very concerned about and certainly want to prevent similar incident from happening again.
That was Wall Street Journal China economics reporter Stella Yifan Xie in Hong Kong. Stella, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Luke.
And finally, how's this for a high-stakes scavenger hunt? The treasure? Well, that's sensitive military documents allegedly posted on the video game communications platform Discord by a 21-year-old member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard, Jack Teixeira. The exact number of those documents still circulating isn't clear after many users scrubbed their profiles and deleted posts after the leaks became public. But Journal national security reporter Jessica Donati says that's only fueling the desire of hunters, who are often teenage video game enthusiasts, to scour the platform for a glimpse at top secret government intel.
Users on Discord come from all around the world, so many of them were not afraid of being prosecuted by the US government or having the FBI show up at their door. So for them, it was a challenge that didn't have any restrictions. Talking to a number of them, I asked them, why are you so interested in these documents? And there was a wide range of reasons, and one of them being that they could show up in front of their school friends and say, look, I've got secret classified documents. Some teenagers hadn't trusted reporting about the war or the way that Ukraine or Russia was characterized by the media, and many of the documents contained information about the war, so they wanted to see for themselves something more authentic and raw. Some of these kids were already in the groups where these top secret documents had been shared, and many of them took it upon themselves to see how many they could collect. For them, it became just another sort of game.
And it's a game that people might still keep playing, given that some of the classified documents still remain online, according to social media posts viewed by the Wall Street Journal. And for more on this story, check out yesterday's episode of our Tech News Briefing podcast. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.